Hi guys, Claudia Berlin here. So I've kind of, I say scripted, it's not really scripted. I've got some bullet points because I ramble and I have certain things that I want to say and clarify. And I'm sure that there are going to be people here who've come here because they saw me on Question Time and, you know, they have an idea of me in their minds of what I am, what I stand for. And I basically just want to explain what I was there for, why I said what I did, and basically how it went down kind of situation. All I would ask is, if you're someone who's come here for that reason, just hear me out. You know, I'm very pro free speech. I'm not going to close the comments or anything like that. The only time I would delete a comment or hide a comment is if it was something that's going to be harmful for other people to read, obviously. But, you know, otherwise, you know, I don't close my comments. I'm big on free speech. I'm big on democracy. That's fine. I would just ask the very basic, which is that you're not racist, really, which I'm getting a lot of at the moment. Also, I imagine this is going to get like downvoted into hell, but you know, again, fill your boots, please feel free, express your opinions all you want, that's up to you. I don't have principles and say what I'm going to say or think what I'm going to think, because I don't kind of go around thinking, oh, what are my principles? I know I'll go for what's most popular, because to me that's not how my mind works. Like, if I believe something, I believe it. If I feel something really strongly, I feel it. So it makes no difference to me whether lots of people disagree with me. It's what I think. So a few things I want to say and clarify. First of all, this is probably obvious, yes, it was me on Question Time. Obviously it was me. I've seen there have been a couple of videos which I've not actually watched, but I'm aware because of family members that, you know, certain people have made videos about me being on there, which is absolutely fine, and, you know, they're right. But I've certainly seen some interesting twisting of the narrative, which is pretty interesting based on what actually went down in this video and kind of what's being put out there, so that's pretty interesting. So I'm going to try and keep this brief, and I will elaborate if necessary, and I will make other videos on various things. If you want to know the behind the scenes of Question Time, I can do that in another video, but this is what I really want to say. Also, before we begin, I want to say this is a keffiyeh that is actually from Palestine. I'm proud to wear it. I was proud to wear it on Question Time. And I will put the link in the description box. I don't know if they're able to even make them right now anymore, but this is actually from Palestine, so I was really proud to wear it. Okay, so first of all, as a lot of you know, if you're already on this channel, my name is Claudia. Hello. A lot of people are saying that I'm Muslim. I'm not Muslim, I'm Christian. I'm a Christian, I'm a pacifist, I go to church, I sing at my local church, I basically love Jesus, I am British, I was born here, I've lived here all my life, I've never lived anywhere else, so I'm a British person and I'm mixed race, so I've got, my dad is Indian and my mum is English. So I'm getting a lot of people thinking, oh, she must be Muslim, and the Islamophobia I've had, you know, with people thinking that I'm Muslim is absolutely disgusting, you know, because this is what Muslims are going through all the time, this sort of extreme Islamophobia. I'm not even Muslim, but, you know, people think Muslim adjacent, and it's been really, really appalling to witness that. I'm not Muslim, I'm a Christian, I believe in peace, justice, equality, caring for the oppressed, which are all the things that basically Jesus stood for. And I want to see a peaceful world where we're not seeing innocent people dying all the time, and especially not innocent children. Okay, so number one, why I went on. Basically, to be completely honest with you, because it was local, I am disabled, so I've got I have very, very bad anxiety and panic disorder. I am disabled in different ways. So I do support the London protests and all that kind of thing, but I can't get to London. So I do local protests, and I've been trying to use this channel as best I can to try and, you know, just raise awareness. And it just so happened that Question Time was going to be local. Now, my mental health has been very, very poor recently. You know, I've seen a lot of people since Question Time coming on my channel and, you know, trying to use that as like some sort of attack, like, oh, you know, she's mentally ill. And, you know, I've got no shame about that. You know, I do have mental illness. I do suffer with mental illness. It doesn't inform my political beliefs. I'm still a full human being. And, you know, it's long past, gone are the days when I felt ashamed of that, because a great many people all across the world suffer with mental health issues. And I don't believe in stigmatizing those. So, yep, if you're someone who's coming here to be like, oh, look how mentally ill she is, you're quite right. You are absolutely right. I too wish I wasn't. But I am. I really believe that we need to use our voices however we can. I have been really, really unwell, and in some ways that actually helped me a bit. I'm part of the local Palestine Solidarity Campaign. So, you know, there's a lot of brilliant speakers and voices, and I really didn't want what's going on in Gaza to go under the radar, because I've got this horrible sinking feeling that we're all seeing is that now it's going down the news cycle, even though it's getting worse there. Every single day, more and more innocent people are dying. So many children, so many women. And I hate that people go women and children, because, you know, the innocent men there, they're just innocent people being slaughtered. And it's kind of going down the list of items, which is disgusting to me, considering we are complicit. In this country, we are arming Israel. We are showing support to Israel. Now, I've had some people saying to me, why aren't you so angry about Ukraine, for example? This is what I would say here. First of all, it doesn't make any sense anyway. Like, I don't quite understand how, like, logically thinking, put aside any political bias you might have or anything, are you against starving the population, oppression and occupation? Because if when Putin is starving the people of Ukraine, you're able to call it a war crime, and politicians like Keir Starmer are politicians able to say that's a war crime and they're able to openly condemn that, why is that same consistency not coming up when it comes to Palestine and what's happening to the Palestinians? It doesn't make any sense. And also, I would say, we are obviously supporting Ukraine in this country. We are supporting their efforts. Rishi Sunak has been to Ukraine. Lots of our politicians have. We're not supplying Putin with weaponry. We're not helping him to starve the population. Like, we're not doing that. I went on because I already have a channel. I'm not scared of public speaking. We have to kind of utilize the skills we do have. And something for me is that I'm not afraid of doing that. That's kind of a bit of a lie, because I was very scared doing it. But I also think it's better that I've already been a target in the past for different things. I already have that online aspect. I've already dealt with that since I was like 19 on here. So it felt like in some ways it was a kind of shield thing, if that makes sense. Also, I'm not lying to you, I'm pretty suicidal. So it kind of felt like, look, there's nothing to lose here. And also, you know, I'm a better target. I would rather be the target than somebody else, because I'm in that state anyway. It should be me rather than somebody else, really, is why I did it. I don't like question time, so I find it to be really biased. I don't think there is a left-wing, there's rarely left-wing voices anymore. The way it's gone politically in this country now, I don't think we have a left anymore. I think that they stitched up Jeremy Corbyn, people like him. We're seeing all the left-wing MPs, like the whip gets taken away from them, everything's moving. Starmer's become basically a Tory. And then he's really excited because Conservative voters are now voting for him. But that's only because he's now become like the Conservatives. He's not changed any minds. He's become that. And so people are comfortable giving him their vote, essentially. Partly why I did it is because of desperation. Because what is happening in Gaza is so, it's so immediate and so desperate. We're seeing this happen on social media. Now, acquaintances I've had, like online acquaintances, friends of friends, have actually been killed. They've actually been killed. So you might know about Rifat. So he was a poet, and I will read you his poem at the end of this video, and he was slaughtered. He was actually targeted and he was killed. You might see lines from his poem, you know, being written on slogans at protests. The people in Gaza are absolutely desperate, and they're saying, please, whatever you do, speak up. Please don't let them forget about this. And it just felt like a desperation, you know, this is going to be on the TV. I didn't know if they'd cut me out or not, but I thought, I really have to try. I also think that, you know, we don't want the protests to dry up. We don't want people feeling hopeless, something that, you know, it's kind of like you get to that state where you think, like, what can we do? Because so many people in this country have marched, so many people. And I truly believe that the people of Britain want a ceasefire. The people of Britain want peace. They don't want us to be spending money on weapons that are going to be used on innocent people. We don't want that. We have enough economic issues here anyway. Like, even just in that self-serving perspective, it doesn't make sense. I don't believe people want that. I think our politicians are acting without our consent. And I think it's important on a show like, you know, a BBC show, which claims to be unbiased. It's not. There's never really a left-wing voice. We need to stand up and be counted, and people need to see that there's others like them, because feeling isolated and like, you know, the world's gone completely mad and you're on your own is really damaging. We need to know that there's so many more of us. There are more of us than there are of them. Like, there are many of us. Now, I wanted to go and I wanted to ask a question about Gaza. I wanted to force the conversation into getting an answer on Gaza, and to just make sure that it's still staying completely relevant. So and I did successfully do that after what I did. The Labour MP, this man who actually voted against a ceasefire, which is incredibly cowardly, and I don't think we should forget the people who voted against a ceasefire. He did end up saying that he supports a two-state solution, that the Labour Party supports a two-state solution, and that they want a sustainable ceasefire. So I am really glad that the programme was able to end on that and they kept that in. And I'm really, really glad. I think the Labour stance on this is weak. I think it's complicit, but I do think it's really important that we keep pushing them and that they know that this is very, very important to us. They have to understand that we're not going to settle for that. We're not going to settle for anything less than support for innocent people and a ceasefire. And at the moment, they can't deliver that. We need to keep pushing that. When you're asked to go on the show, you submit two questions. They go through your social media. I'm really not sure how I got through their social media checks, honestly. I don't know. I was connected to the Doctor Who time team, which is on the BBC, and I've been in a documentary about mental health, perhaps through that, I'm not sure. But you submit those questions and then they decide, and you only get told on the night if you've been chosen to ask a question. So I wasn't chosen to ask a question, but, you know, what happens is a question will be asked. It will go to the panel, then you can put your hand up in the audience and it becomes a discussion and a debate. They didn't get to any sort of question about Gaza, even though at the beginning they spoke about the Middle East. The closest they got was, I believe, Sonia Soda. She spoke about the idea of having terrorists on your border, but there was no mention of Gaza, which is currently being terrorised by a state that we are funding. You know, talks about conscription. You know, I'll get into this in another video, like, you know, getting conscripted into a war and what does that mean for us. But there's no actual discussion of the actual heart of the issue, which is that the people of Gaza have been occupied. This did not start on October the 7th. I'm not undermining or denying the horror of October the 7th. I don't agree that people should take hostages. Like, no matter who is committing war crimes, I don't support it. I'm a Christian. I'm a pacifist. I don't believe any innocent person should be hurt. I will always stand against those things, but it is disingenuous. It's just plain wrong to pretend that this is a situation that happened on October the 7th and that is where it started. The people of Gaza have been living in an open-air prison for so, so, so long. They don't have the same rights as Israelis. The Israelis are able to control. There are checkpoints. They can control whether they go to school. They control their power. They control how much food gets in, like when it gets in. They arrest children for throwing stones. Now, if you're Palestinian, you can be arrested without trial. And also in this conversation about hostages, which again, it's totally wrong to take hostages, you know, like, for example, there are still hostages there now, like Noah, for example, who's 26. This poor girl is still there. And it is Netanyahu who is, he's now turning on the actual families of the hostages who are desperate to get their loved ones back. Because for Netanyahu, this is about ethnic cleansing. This is about taking that land. It's about committing genocide, forced migration, whatever it takes. He's an extremist and he wants that land and he's going to get rid of the people of Gaza. The hostages being there, he needs the slogan, bring them home. But when the opportunity actually comes to bring them home, which is, you need a ceasefire for that. In reality, you need a ceasefire for that. That's not what he wants. Because once that happens, he no longer can kind of cover what he's doing and say he's doing it for the hostages. We're now starting to see people understanding that because he's turning on the families of the hostages. But when we talk about hostages, Israel has hostages too and has arrested children. I mean, I'm going to link to this video if you're interested. There's an Amnesty report, there's a Save the Children report about the way in which Palestinian children are treated. This is much, much deeper than October the 7th. I'm not sitting here saying, oh, October the 7th was fine or a good thing. When innocent people are killed, it's never a good thing. But this has been 70 years of occupation, and occupied people have a right to resist. I support Palestinian resistance. That doesn't mean that I support every act of in the name of resistance. I will never support, I'm a Christian, I'm a pacifist, I will never support the killing of innocent people or anything like that. But I do support Palestinian resistance, and it only makes logical sense to support resistance against a regime like that. The studio panel were talking, when we were there, they were talking about knife crime and how dangerous that is for children. Some really bizarre people in the audience, actually. You know, sort of people who were like, oh yeah, chuck the 10-year-olds in the prison for having knives. But, you know, if we can understand with issues like that how tragic it is, how children end up in that place, right, where they have knives, if we can understand the sort of context around that, there is absolutely no reason why we cannot understand the situation that is happening in Gaza. At a human level, human beings, they're going to fight for their freedom. And they have every right to fight for their freedom, the lives of their family and the lives of their children. That is just being human. And in this country, we understand that when it comes to Ukraine. We understand that and we feel respect for it, right? We openly talk about the bravery of that, but we expect Palestinians to be entirely peaceful, to not be angry. And they are living with a trauma that we can't understand. we cannot possibly understand that. I also want to say that when I went on the show, it was the day before the International Court of Justice ruling on South Africa's genocide case against Israel. And I'm also going to link that document in the description box, because please just like read what is actually happening. It's very, very well sourced. It is incredibly well sourced. When you do see the cold hard facts of this and what's been going on for all this time, it's just devastating. And it's not something any of us should support, and we should be trying to help the Palestinian people. Question Time is meant to be relevant to what's going on politically at that time. On that actual day, so as with every day, Palestinians are being killed, children are under the rubble, the hospital system is at complete breaking point. Israel is openly targeting hospitals, refugee camps, places of worship. Basically nowhere in Gaza is safe. That's not an exaggeration. There is nowhere safe in Gaza, and there are children dying under the rubble as we speak. It was the day before the ICJ ruling. It was incredibly relevant, and it was, I believe, deliberately sidestepped. We'd also been very recently bombing Yemen. We'd been happy to jump into action with the US, hitting targets in Yemen because of a shipping route, but we wouldn't act to protect the people in Palestine. So we are actually committing aggressive actions in various places, which is going to come back to bite the ordinary people here. Our politicians didn't ask us about this. They didn't put it through Parliament. And both the Tories and the opposition are both supportive of those actions, which is not going to end well for anyone. It's just going to make the conflict wider. It's just going to hurt everyone. The two questions that I submitted, I personally have like a lot of anger and pain about the situation, but I wanted to amplify Palestinian voices. My questions were written by a wonderful Palestinian woman who's part of our solidarity group, and she thought of the questions. They have to be 25 words long, and she wanted to know about, would these politicians commit to a Palestinian state and what the terms of that would be? And she also wanted to ask about freedom of speech and how we can protect anti-Zionist voices, because at the moment it seems that these people are being smeared as being anti-Semitic for opposing the idea of Zionism and the crimes that Israel are currently committing. For example, if you look at what's happened with Mohammed Al-Kurd, so he is a writer from Occupied Jerusalem. I've followed him for quite a while. He's incredibly articulate. I'm going to put some links to his stuff in the description box because you really need to follow him. Anyway, he was asked to speak at one of the London marches and he misspoke. And there were pressure from people to try and get him talked to by the police, like counter-terrorism people, and it really was ridiculous. Whether or not you agree with this man, the reason that he was investigated was literally for misspeaking. And it's a waste of our money, it's a waste of police time, and it's basically a way to intimidate people who are going to talk about the crimes of Israel and basically the ideology of Zionism. This push to connect Jewishness and Zionism is incredibly dangerous, and it's very successful right now. Okay, so number three here. Sorry, this is all over the place. Why did I heckle and interrupt? I feel like I've kind of already covered this a little bit, but I wanted, on the BBC, I really, really needed for Gaza to be spoken about and for people to realize that there is still hope. And you know, I believe the general public is very much in support of a ceasefire. I really do, and it needs to be. I really want to do that on camera. I did. I managed to get the Labour politician to speak a little bit about that, and it kind of stops them from kind of jumping around, because if you'll notice it with Labour recently, they kind of say anything at all. Like, it changes all the time based on what the public think. It's very, very bizarre, so it's really important to pin that down. You know, what exactly are you going to do so that we can then hold them to it and see if they do? The reason that I wanted to disrupt and why I think it's valid to disrupt is because I believe in protest. I'm non-violent, I'm a pacifist, and I believe that it's relevant and more important. Contrary to what some people seem to think, I promise you, in real life, I'm very polite. I really am incredibly polite. It's probably the most disruptive thing I've ever done. But I feel it was important. Sometimes I think these issues, the fact that people are dying as we speak and we're backing it, and we have power here. We can put sanctions on Netanyahu. If he loses his allies, if the US stop backing him, if we stop backing him, he's in trouble. And that is something that we can push. You know, you do have to disrupt sometimes. And to anyone who thinks, oh, that's really rude, all the rights that we have in this country, in Britain, right? Rights that we are glad to have, right, that other countries might not have. If you look at how they were won by disruption, essentially, because the people in power don't want to give those rights. You know, it's the people always that push for those rights. That's just, you know, these things that, you know, you talk about the freedom of speech and And it's, I completely agree, you know, you've got every right to dislike me, to hate the way I conducted myself and what I believe in. But we have that right. We do have that right. It's a great thing we have. And these rights were, you know, they're fought for by disruption. So these ideas about criminalizing all sorts of protests, even if they're peaceful, it's incredibly dangerous because that's how we got our rights. I decided timing-wise that I was going to do it at the end, and that's because I didn't want to speak over, you know, the other people who'd applied to be there as well. They had valid things they wanted to ask. So, for example, the question about, you know, the Tories, someone had asked, you know, it's important, the knife crime question. I don't know people's backgrounds. There are going to be people that that's really, really important to. I didn't want to speak over them in that moment because, you know, that's for them, and it's important that the politicians, you know, discuss those issues. They're really important issues. Now, at the start of, before the show is on, Fiona Bruce gives you a you know, she tells you what's going to happen, and she said that at the end, there is like 5 minutes to the end, there's going to be a light and funny question. Okay, so it's not a political question, it's just like a silly question which isn't important. So that was, I decided that when we hit that mark, that was when I was going to do it, because I didn't want to speak over someone else's important topic or anything that was really, you know, it really was just a light question at the end. And anyone who was there on that night will be able to tell you the same, that that's what we were told. So I didn't want to speak over someone else who was there. I also, you know, I waited for the gentleman who asked the question to ask his question, and he was answered by a couple of people. Why did I choose to speak when Constantine answered? I'm sorry if I pronounced his name wrong. Well, I didn't know who he was, I'll be completely honest. I still don't really know who he is very much. I found on the night, he seemed very dog whistly, very, very bizarre. Fiona Bruce described him before we went on as funny, sharp as a tack, and really amusing. I didn't personally find him amusing, I found him a bigot. But yeah, I decided to speak over what he was saying because it was relevant. So the question was about hope for young people. Constantine, I believe, since I've been on the show, I've looked him up, and I'm actually glad I didn't know, because I think I would have been, you know, I really don't like that man at all. You know, based on what I've seen, it's even worse than I thought. But going to him about hope for young people, and this man is in his 40s, and he was, you know, talking about people talking down Britain, for example, and it just felt like madness, like through the looking glass. It's not talking down Britain to want us to do the right thing. You know, it's not, criticism is, and dissent are rights we have in Britain and rights that we're happy to have. It's ridiculous to think that people who criticise our actions on the world stage and our government and what we do as a country, it's ridiculous to think that that is anti-Britain in some way. It's not. It's how all change is made. People want things to be better. And it really annoyed me that, you know, he was talking, you know, well, people want to talk down Britain. And it's sort of like, well, we are currently aligned with a genocidal regime. We are currently arming them. We are currently in support of a regime which is committing the most wicked crimes against children, like white phosphorus being used. That is a war crime. Starvation. Children are dying under the rubble. There aren't enough medical supplies. So people are being operated on without painkillers, and these are children. I can't seem to express that enough. And if you saw on the night, like, some people have said, oh, you know, she looked a bit tearful, and they've thought, you know, that was funny. It's because that's what I was thinking about. It's very, very serious. Like, it's people's lives, and we are all privileged here in Britain to be sitting there in that studio in the warm, in the safe, you know, being safe, like I'm safe right in this, you know, talking about this now. It's our responsibility to use our voices, because these people, they don't have that option right now. Also, I'll say he wasn't really making any new points. He'd already, his whole thing was about Britain's the best place in the world kind of thing. And it's like, okay, like, we get that. I shouted shame on you, really. I wasn't directing it especially at him, but basically shame on, I felt like the whole panel, essentially. You know, a question about hope for young people, and all I could think about in my mind was, you know, how is there hope for us when we're in a two-party system where both of the parties support genocide, when young people are so overwhelmingly in support of a ceasefire, and our politicians won't deliver it? Our politicians are acting aggressively in the Middle East, in foreign policy, you know, we're getting involved in ways that are going to hurt us more. They are doing this in our names, and we don't support it. And if we say we don't support it, we don't support the slaughter of children, then we get smeared as anti-British or whatever they like to say. Well, no, we're all British, and I believe we all have the right to dissent and to criticise. And that is a really dangerous idea, that to criticise something means you're against it. I believe what I said. So I don't know how much of it's audible in the actual clip. So I yelled, "Shame on you." I said something like, "How can there be hope when a genocide is happening?" I yelled, "25,000 children." At that point, not children, people, 25,000 dead or something like that. At that point, that was kind of the number. And bear in mind, that's only the number that we've got identified. There are so many people injured, so many people under the rubble. They are just digging graves. People can't get to their family members. It's so much more than those numbers can even express. Even that isn't enough to explain. I think I yelled, "Are you not going to address it?" I think I yelled something like, "People are dying." I asked, "Don't you have families? Don't you have children? There are people under the rubble." Basically, it just came out. I just didn't plan what I was going to say. In some ways, I had things I wanted to say, but that was essentially what I said. I think you could hear some of it. I know some of the papers, like The Mirror, The Mail, The Express, commented on it, and I'm glad that they were able to know that I was talking about Gaza, because apparently you could hear genocide, Gaza, shame on you, those things. So people got the gist, and obviously the kefir that I'm wearing as well. I hope people understood what I was there to say. Okay, so people have said that I was doing it for attention, and to be honest, that's true. That is true. I wanted them to be forced to address Gaza. Yeah, the attention wasn't about me, like, as a person. I wanted this to push that issue so that people know, and people... I just don't want people to forget about it. It would feel like a total betrayal of the people in Palestine, and it's more relevant and more important that we speak, because it is... we are backing it as a country. Britain is backing it, and it's really, really shameful. I also think something that I found so... a couple of things as well that I found really strange. If you'll notice in the episode, some people were heckling earlier on in the episode and they were given the microphone. I don't know if you'll notice that. That happened quite a lot, which was quite bizarre. Didn't happen in my case. I wonder why. I noticed that something Constantine had said in the... something that shocked me to be there in the audience... he had openly spoken about, you know, killing the enemy. Like, that language of point of the army is to kill the enemy. And I was really shocked. To me, that's radical. You know, talking so openly about just killing people is, to me, radical. I don't see why I'm seen as radical and so disruptive for shouting to try and draw attention to the fact that innocent people are being killed, because I want peace, justice, and a ceasefire. But you can openly talk about... you know, it feels like we're in a parallel world, and I think it was like desperation, just hearing that and knowing how much things had shifted. It just really hit me. Right, something that people have I want to address, because people keep saying, they're saying, "Oh, you hate Britain, get out of Britain." Now, first of all, I'm going to say this, whether or not you like me, you're just going to have to cope with the fact that I am British. I've lived here all my life. I will always be British. You might not like me, but there's nothing you can do about it. So just cope. To be honest, I don't love Britain and I don't hate Britain. I don't really believe in nationalism. I think, like, I don't really understand, you know, it's just an accident of birth. Wherever you're born in the world, I'm more interested in being part of a human family of different people from wherever we are. I don't really feel proud or ashamed. All I can do is speak up when, you know, politicians do things in our name. But yeah, no, I don't love Britain and I don't hate Britain. I despise a lot of our actions. Sometimes I'm ashamed with what they do in our name and our actions. But it doesn't make any sense anyway. Like, it's an accident of birth. And even if I did hate Britain, like, you know, why does that even matter? There's this... It's weird, really. It's an authoritarian thing from people who think they're so anti-woke and free speech. But... they can't handle dissent, and if you disagree with them or criticize, then it's like, get out of the country, and it's like aggression and it's intimidation, and it's like, you actually seem to be the one who would be more suited to a different place where we don't have freedom of speech, because it seems like you don't, when you hear something you don't agree with, you just freak out and like have to destroy the person. Like, you have to get them out of the space, which is ridiculous. Like, I don't agree with so many of the people. I've had so much racism telling me to go home. This is my home. I'm British. Cope. But I'm not telling you to go and that you're not British. I can hate you as a human being and you're still British. I'm not saying, oh, you have to go because I disagree with you. I'm a grown adult. I can handle people disagreeing with me without feeling like so personally wounded that they have to leave the place I'm in. I think it's really childish. But again, yeah, I do think we have a duty to speak out when politicians act in our names. I'm not going to sit here and say I love Britain because a load of fascists and right-wingers are coming at me like, oh, you hate Britain? I hate what we're doing right now. I feel no particular connection I love the people that I'm around. I've always lived here, but I don't know what it's like to be somewhere else. And I think nationalism's dangerous, and it's not for me, really. I care about people and human beings, no matter where they're from. You know, I think we're very lucky to have the rights that we do have here. I'm really, really grateful for that, certainly. But then I think, you know, part of that is we do have the right to speak up, so I'm going to. And I support people who do speak up. And even if they're people I can't stand and I don't agree with what they're saying, I'm glad they can say it, frankly. So I'm going to wrap this up, and I will make other videos. I'll probably answer comments if you have any comments. I'm going to link to people in Gaza who you can listen to, people, actual Palestinian people who have lived this. You know, for us, even those of us who've been following this, this is very, very complex. Not in terms of right or wrong. It's absolutely obvious here that the occupation is wrong. Israel is committing war crimes. It should be condemned for those things. What we are witnessing is the mass slaughter of a people, the dehumanization of children even. You know, the idea that because a small group did something, that the whole group must suffer. That is collective punishment, and that is illegal under international law. That is in the Genocide Convention. You can't starve people. You can't make them sick. And people are saying, oh, but they have to find Hamas. And to be honest, like, I don't completely... I have thoughts on that as well, but which are not for this video. But so basically you're saying you support terrorism, because that's terrorism, right? To terrorize a population of innocent people because of the actions of a group to make them do what you want is terrorism. Israel is acting with terror. It is being a terrorist state, and it's committing genocide and attempting to commit genocide. It is killing countless people. This did not start on October the 7th. It started so long ago. And especially in Britain, when you look at our part in that whole situation, because we occupied Palestine before that situation, it is our responsibility. We have so much more responsibility than most to speak out and do what's right. What is happening in Palestine is not right, and it's not normal. And it doesn't matter to me how unpopular that is or how much things have shifted that makes you a radical. I don't care if you hate me and you call me a radical, because I want peace. I want justice. I don't want to see innocent people bombed, their houses destroyed. I don't want to see them losing their limbs and burned and crying and wrapping their loved ones in those white sheets and mass graves. If that makes me a radical person and that makes you hate me, then I'm comfortable with that, and I don't care. The people of Palestine have been through enough. That people have been through hell for so long, for so, so, so long. And what is happening to them right now is wrong, and it is evil, and we need to stand up against it. Like, you guys can say whatever you want about me to me, but that opinion's not going to change. You're never going to intimidate me into thinking that the deaths of 26,000 innocent people is acceptable. That is in no way a justifiable price. No, it's absolutely disgusting. Netanyahu is a monster. He is a war criminal. He doesn't even seem to care for his own people, his own hostages. To him, they're just symbols to that. He basically, it works better for him that they're still hostages, because he can continue his genocidal campaign and use them as an excuse. And it looks like the families of those hostages are getting wise to that, and so he's now turned on them as well. I support Palestine 100%. I support the resistance of Palestinians. I support their right to exist. I support their freedom. I support their right of return. And think, just remember that on October the 7th, I'm not, you know, obviously I don't support any innocent person being harmed at all, and I never ever will, but understand that's not where it started. And on October the 6th, there were children in Israeli prisons, there was occupation, illegal settlements, it was humiliation, it was open air prisons, it was just unbearable. That's October the 6th. And if you're telling me that if that happened to us here, we wouldn't fight back, then you're delusional. You're absolutely delusional. If we want there to be peace, then we have to do the right thing and not escalate a massive conflict, but help the victims of those of that conflict and do what is right. Support the Palestinian people, support their freedom, support their rights. History will judge us for this, but also, I mean, like, we don't have time. The Palestinians do not have time for history to be the judge. We need change right now, because as we speak, there are going to be innocent children who are dying and suffering and traumatized. The Palestinians have experienced their October the 7th so many days for the last 70 years. Okay, so I'm going to leave with this. It's a poem by Rifat Alarir. It's called If I Must Die. If I must die, you must live to tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings, make it white with a long tail, so that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad who left in a blaze and bid no one farewell, not even to his flesh, not even to himself, sees the kite, my kite you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment an angel is there, bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope. Let it be a tale. Thank you for watching, and I will see you really soon for another video. All right, love you. Bye.